Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Thank you so much. And we're going to continue our conversations on Russia hoax everything. And I want to introduce Tom Rooney, who's a former member of Congress. Not a lot of people knew him because he was one of the guys who took his job seriously. He was on the front lines in the trenches during the whole entire Russia hoax. He was one of our lead members of Congress on the team and actually led the questioning along with Trey Gowdy, who a lot of people know because he's been so obviously on Fox News a lot. But Tom Rooney was someone who took his job very seriously. He's now retired a member of Congress, but really did a lot of the dirty work back when everybody just assumed that Donald Trump was colluding with Russians. You know, Tom, I want to take, first of all, welcome. Thank you for doing this and being on the podcast.
Thanks. Good to see you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen you in person for a while. Yeah. So we're just, watching each other on Skype and my podcast now, this is actually new. You're only like my fourth or fifth person to do this where it's going to be posted onto YouTube and then also will be on podcasts on iTunes and everywhere else. But I want to take the viewer and the listener back to our early conversations in January and February of 2017, when this Russia hoax was essentially foisted onto our committee, on the backs of our committee. And as you know, you were there earlier in the year before when we were very critical of what the Obama administration was doing and with Russia and allowing Putin to get away with. You were there for the meeting right after the election where suddenly we started hearing about this Russia stuff, which we really didn't hear about before. But remember, their original assessment that we received was, hey, this was normal Russian activity dating back to the Soviet Union days. Nothing new here. Then, of course, as you advance forward, there was that leak out of the Senate that said, oh, no, we think the Russians were trying to help Trump. Then they put together, Brennan quickly with Obama, put together this intelligence community assessment that's done in just a matter of weeks. Then fast forward to January, we're all sitting there going, what? Where the hell did this come from? We had real serious work to do. You have a new president, a new team. It was an opportunity for us as Republicans to advance some of the ideas the Obama administration didn't want to do that we were promoting as House Republicans on the Intelligence Committee. A lot of good ideas and good things that we wanted to try. Of course, a lot of that got derailed. One of the things I tried to do early on is I tried to triage this Russia hoax. And that's why I went to both you, Tom, and Trey Gowdy as our only two lawyers on the committee. And I said, look, guys, it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be very painful. But what I see right now is, we've looked through all 17 agencies. They've given us everything they have on Russia, and we don't have anything. We spend billions, tens of billions of dollars a year on intelligence. We don't have anything between Trump and Russia. So I don't know where this is going, but we have important work to do as a committee. This is, I remember when I brought you into my office, Tom, you and Trey, and I said, look, we've got really important work to do here. There's a lot going on between Afghanistan, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, the challenges in Venezuela, North Korea, you name it. We have real work to do. Seems like what seemed to be a strange focus on Russia hoax. So I go to you and Trey, and I said, I hate to ask you guys to do this, but we're going to have to bring in a lot of witnesses. And as you know, Damon Nelson, our staff director, worked closely with you. He unfortunately had passed away.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom, I'm going to turn it over to you. What was going through your mind at that point when we asked you to come on board and do that?
Well, it was interesting because of the way that it happened. Just as you said, we got the normal kind of like what we'd expect from countries like Russia during campaigns, and now with social media, what other kind of newer things might they try or things like that? That moved on to something much bigger. But when you asked Trey and I to come into your office, I remember thinking, I'd already announced that I was leaving for Congress, or I'd already made up my mind if I didn't publicly announce it. So I thought to myself, that the timing of this is actually not that bad for me because I'm not going to be running for re-election. I'm not going to be out there having to campaign. So I can really focus on this. And one of the things that I thought would be important for both Trey and I to do would be to kind of take it so seriously that there would be no way politically that the Democrats could come back and say, well, Tom Rooney and Trey Gowdy, you know, treated this like some kind of political platform to go on TV all the time and advance their own narratives, which I think we saw played out very commonly on the other side. But I thought that if Trey and I conducted ourselves in an extremely professional, lawyerly way, that there would be no doubt that our side would at least be able to get the facts and the evidence out there to show what the truth is. And that's what we were looking for. And at that point, we really didn't know where it was going to go necessarily. But I think now that the transcripts have come out, you know, I've always been grateful to you, Mr. Chairman, for having the confidence in me. You know, I knew everybody has confidence in Trey. That's a no-brainer. But to be able to sit with him and...
Whether we should or not, that's a whole other story.
to go through that with him was also awesome. I mean, just watching him work in that skiff, witness after witness, and then listening to the Democrats go and then Trey respond. It was just like, he just got you. So it was a great experience for me. It was one, like you said, that we didn't get much publicity for, but that was fine. It wasn't about politics for me, and I don't think it was for Trey either. He really didn't do much media. And then watching these transcripts come out now and what's in them, even though our report, as you said in the Trey Gowdy podcast recently, the report said all of this stuff. Right. You know, this isn't right. Anything new, but to actually see the words with the witnesses, you know, I've always said, I hope somebody writes a book about this stuff someday so they can see on a daily basis what we had to do and what we found.
Well, I guess one of the things, Tom, that was probably frustrating is that you would go down for these depositions. And if you look at what you and Trey were very regimented, you had things that you wanted to get on the record about collusion, conspiracy, coordination, you know, very clear. You know, do you have any evidence? What do you have? What about hearsay? Very, very clearly focused. But I think one of the challenges that you would have, I'm sure you have lots of examples of this, but maybe bring the viewer and the listener into what you would deal with. You'd have one of these witnesses come in and there'd be a buildup to the witness's arrival, right? There'd be a week of fake news stories about how this witness is, you're really, really bad. He's the tie. He's the link to Russia. And then, of course, you know, by the time that witness would get there, even though we would never publicize it, that was the damnedest part about this, and you weren't talking to the media, Trey wasn't talking to the media, and yet on the day that this person would arrive to have their interview transcribed, I mean, and I'm not even joking, there would be 40 cameras, both at the top of the stairs, all the way down into the basement, right, or the dungeon now, as people call it. It's become infamous now during the impeachment scandal and hoax, but you'd have 40 cameras top to bottom that would snake down the spiral staircase that many people have seen. You'd come walking into this in the morning into 40 cameras and probably, what, 100, 150 people some days being there. It must have been frustrating because you know that we weren't the ones leaking this out. Then you would get down behind closed doors. And then, you know, if you take a break to go vote, you know, you'd be down there for 2 or 3 hours. Give us a couple examples. I know there's many. What you would encounter when you would come out in front of all these cameras.
That would happen all the time. And, you know, trying to find different ways to get down there without getting peppered with questions. And honestly, you know, I respect the press in that I know that they have a job to do, but it was always seemingly like they were attacking us. And very rarely, if ever, and I don't even think in retrospect, now that all this stuff's come out, if anybody's actually gone back to Adam Schiff and say, well, you know, now what do you say? But it's just like we've moved on from that and now everybody's forgotten it. But there's a lot of things that happened down there. The one thing that came out last week, which I remember when it happened, asking Clapper about whether or not he had briefed the president and the vice president in the White House at a certain time period that meant something, and him saying no and looking at Cash and other staff and just be like, we knew that that wasn't right. I remember, like, you know, blood rushing to my head being like, I think this guy just lied to me. And then we went back after and talked about it. And then months later, I remember he testified publicly that he didn't remember saying that. So it was like, now that it's on record and it's out. But the one high profile thing that actually was the first time I went on the news that night, I went on Aaron Burnett. But we had Hope Hicks in the skiff, and obviously high profile. You know, she was very well known, and
presidents had been on the Hope Hicks had been on the campaign. For those people who don't know, had been on the campaign with Donald Trump, had worked for Donald Trump, I think, previously in his real estate business.
Right.
Worked on the campaign and then transitioned into the White House. So clearly, the concept was if there was colluding and coordination and conspiracy going on between Trump and Russia, she would have been there the whole time. Right. So I just wanted to give that little primer.
It's important to know how much access she had to the president, what she would have seen or heard. And so she came in, and Trey and I would always do sort of this same thing where I would basically ask the basic questions of collusion, conspiracy, coordination, anything that like that with the Trump campaign, a few other kind of like broad questions. And then Trey would get into more follow up in detail. We did that with every witness, asked about whether or not they saw any kind of coordination with Russia. Consistently, the answer was no. The Democrats would go and then start asking these 300,000 foot level questions where Trey and I were looking like, where are they going with this? And, you know, are they ever going to bring this in for a landing? And they never did. It's like, do you know this person? Do you know that person? And Hope Hicks and other witnesses would sit there and just, you know, and then finally, one of the Democrats asked, have you ever lied for the president? And she's just like, no. And then they said, well, what about like a white lie? And she said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, what about like, you know, have you ever told a white lie? You know, like if somebody calls for the president and he was there and he was just like, I don't want to talk to that person. She goes, well, he's not here. And she goes, well, maybe I would have said that something like that. So you have lied for the president. And then all of a sudden the buzzer goes off and we get called to vote. And so we have to take a recess. Literally, Trey and I are sitting there for a couple seconds after talking. The Democrats leave. Hope Hicks goes back into an ante room with her lawyer. By the time Trey and I get out to where the press is at the bottom of those steps, they're all like, is it true that Hope Hicks lies for the president? And I'm just like, what are you talking about? I mean, we literally, she just said that 45 seconds ago.
You know, Tom, we can laugh about this now because it is funny, because it was so pathetic about how it was just a direct line. You know, whatever was happening behind closed doors, they'd essentially create a fake news story. And it would go out. We can laugh about that. And in retrospect, it's great. But lives got ruined by this. If you remember, I mean, Hope Hicks was so devastated by this that, you know, she had to quit the next day, right? Or 2 days later. I can't remember when, but she left the White House.
But it's not only that. It's like I walked out there and I remember this one reporter, I don't know, I think it was from Politico. He said to me, is it true that Hope Hicks just admitted lying for the president? I got so mad. I'm like, who told you that? Because I saw the Democrats I could see their butts walking up the staircase. And he's like, well, I can't tell you that. And I was just like, literally, that just happened. But the one thing I think it's important for your listeners to understand is when they asked about the white lie, I said, hold on a second. This is during the questioning. I said, we're here to find out if there's collusion, coordination, or conspiracy for the Trump campaign getting help from the Russians. Did you in your testimony today, or have you ever lied on behalf of the president with regard to any of the things that are important that we're talking about here today? And she goes, never, not once. And so we can talk about white lies, telling somebody calling on the phone that the president's not really there. But with regard to what we were there, so this is just good evidence as to how the Democrats would use something stupid, like the president saying on a phone call that he wasn't there, that's her lying for the president. And ignoring the fact that she answered the question with regard to collusion as absolutely not. That never made the news. So I went on Aaron Burnett that night, and this is another unfortunate casualty of the integrity of the process. And I said, the wheels have come off this committee. And then they brought that around to you as saying that I was like attacking the committee and you. And I'm like, no. You're asking me about Hope Hicks and the Democrats leaking. The wheels have come off this investigation in that it's not a sanctimonious process where we can have faith that what we're going to do and the report that we're going to write is going to be pure and honest. And so that was another reverberation about how the press would spin something that I would say, which is why I didn't really talk to the press. The one time I did, they tried to like assess it to you and the committee as a whole. And it was just unfortunate. But
I remember
people also don't know that a lot of these witnesses like Hope were there voluntarily. And she stayed for like 9 hours. And a lot of these witnesses stayed because they wanted to try to help and get the truth out.
Well, I remember Damon Nelson, who unfortunately passed away, our staff director, who was coordinating this. Because as you remember, and I should give kudos also to Mike Conaway, because when I was accused of, you know, whatever the hell they accused, that midnight run thing.
Still don't know what that, I still don't understand that whole thing, but go ahead.
I know, it's just, you can't even make this up, because it would be cool if, like, something actually even remotely like that happened.
Right.
But, you know, even to this day, and I say this, I mean, the lunatics that are left of the Democrats on the Intelligence Committee, they literally go on television all the time, or they'll even say it on the record. Remember the midnight run. And the funny thing about the midnight run is only lives in their head, like in their own sick fantasies that they have. I mean, they like envision me like doing all this James Bond stuff. It didn't happen. You know, I didn't do it. And it's funny that, like, I just must live in their head that this story somehow just continued. But after that happened, they accused me of leaking information to the president, which was really idiotic since the president is the holder of the intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's when we discovered the unmaskings. But I remember Conaway obviously came in, and I asked him if he would just lead and work with you and Trey on the team we had already set up. And I would continue doing the FISA abuse and the unmaskings. But one of the things that Damon would say, he'd be so frustrated because, you know, he'd brief me on, okay, here's what happened today. And you may remember this, and you kind of alluded to it just a little bit. He'd say, well, you know, we asked our questions, you know, what Tom and Trey would normally do. And then the Democrats, they would open up the Moscow telephone book and they start reading off names to people. He called it the Russian telephone book questions. And I think that's really the key. If you look back, if people actually, you know, these transcripts that were kept hidden by the Democrats for all this time, you know, that should have been out. But the real thing you see is that the professionalism that you and Trey brought to this and the rest of our team and Cash Patel, our lead investigator, and the others, but their questions were such a joke. If you just go and read, like if you just want to read for comedy, for comedic purposes, this is a joke. These people didn't even have any questions to ask the witnesses. That's how sad this was.
You know, in retrospect now, with that, the whole thing with you and with the questions that were asked, it was smoke and mirrors to allow them to get on television every night. But I think now that the transcripts are out, and with Schiff saying from the beginning that he had evidence or circumstantial evidence or whatever, what really infuriates me now, even though I'm out of Congress and, you know, nobody cares what I think, that the press isn't going back to him now and saying, like, okay, all this is out now. Everything, nothing that you have said, Adam, has come true. Nothing. Like, what do you have to say about that? And it's just, it's kind of like it's ignored because maybe it's because of, you know, the impeachment and everything else that's kind of, it's moved to the back burner. But when that happened, you remember when Adam says that he has evidence, I remember thinking, like, what is this evidence? And, like, we need to know. And then when the questions would happen and he'd be asking phone book people, like, you're like, where is the evidence? Like, where's the beef? And so it never happened.
Nobody even knew where those names were coming from.
Right.
I mean, Damon would walk out. They asked, like, I remember, I can't remember the exact number. He's like, you won't believe what they did. They asked like a question on 10 new names. We don't even know who these people are. And to this day,
it never was tied up with anything else. Like, they never brought the plane in for a landing ever. Look, I can complain about the press all day long, but it's just unfortunate that that kind of statement that I have evidence of collusion, and then he never shares it. It goes away and he's never held accountable for it. It's just, you know, that's why the American people don't trust the media. You know, my governor here, Ron DeSantis, who's our former colleague in Washington, he had sort of like a moment there yesterday because he's actually done a pretty good job with this coronavirus, relatively speaking. And the press has just basically hammered him the whole time. And so I think that's one of the things that people don't get about Trump and politics is a lot of people just get extremely angry that it isn't fair. And, you know, they don't get that fake news might sound like a joke, but it really resonates with a lot of people as, you know, something that we're being deprived of as Americans. So,
well, Tom, one of the things that I found, the reason that I do this podcast now is because I go directly to the people. I go directly to my constituents with this podcast. You know, we've even had some, you know, they actually send in, they can send in, you know, people that they want me to interview. You know, right now I'm sitting in, you know, in my house where we have to be because of it, like you, because of this pandemic. But, you know, I'll go out locally and I'll interview people from within my district. We'll interview people, right, discuss issues, and I get great guests like yourself. But the whole purpose of this really is so that I have a unfiltered channel to reach, you know, not only my constituents, but the American people and people all over the globe, because there really is no such thing anymore as a free and fair press. It just ceased to exist. And so thank you. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you doing it too. You know, there used to be at least some channels or shows that you could go on and learn something. And now, unfortunately, you can't. So you doing things like this, I think, is really important. And hopefully people, and hey, I learned a lot, you know, just listening to you and Trey and on his podcast the other day. And if anybody wants to get a good example or a good definition of what unmasking is, Devin Nunes laid it out perfectly as to why we do it, what it means, and when there should be unmasking in that other podcast. So, I mean, this is good for teaching people the truth, I think.
Well, thank you, Tom. And I have two more questions for you, if you would indulge us. But you played a critical role on the unmasking. So I want to talk just a little bit about that. So, you know, it's now come to light. People are learning what unmaskings are, that you have these intelligence reports. And then if people want to see more information, they'll go and they'll request for the name to be revealed.
Right.
Very odd that high-level officials, especially at the end of a presidential administration, would be unmasking the names of Trump transition officials. But, you know, not odd. It's essentially corrupt. But you really were the key questioner when you look at the transcripts with Susan Rice, who, as you know, had essentially went out on television when I came out and made the accusation that, look, this was occurring left and right. She was asked by, I can't remember the news that asked her, but, and she played, I don't know what you're talking about. She played that game.
I remember.
Walk our folks through here. What was it like being in the room asking those questions of Susan Rice, and what were you guys thinking at the time?
I thought that Susan Rice was probably one of the most elusive witnesses that we had, also extremely guarded. And, you know, there are some people that, you know, wanted to share everything. Carter Page comes to mind. But there are some people that were really guarded. You know, I don't want to say what I thought was in her mind, but my hunch was that she was not trying to help our investigation, but trying to protect herself. And I think that, you know, we're getting little tidbits of why maybe as time goes on here. But Susan Rice was very difficult. She was very elusive and extremely guarded in that interview, in that day. I remember wanting to have a conversation with her and wanting to be able to get as much information as we can, especially since we started learning things at that point and not being able to get much out of her.
Right. And now the transcripts kind of speak for themselves. And now you see the unmaskings that were done by not only her, but many, many others, hundreds and hundreds. So, Tom, final question. And normally I forgot to do this at the beginning, but so this is a really softball one, but you're from a very well-known family. I know you never talk about it a lot. The famous Rooney family, Pittsburgh Steelers. Your grandfather's was Art, right?
Right.
Right. So tell us just kind of as we're leaving today, give us a great story from when you were a kid with your grandfather. What's one of your fondest memories of the Pittsburgh Steelers with your grandfather?
Well, you know, just growing up in the 70s, I mean, I'm almost 50. So when I was like in my, you know, I was from eight years old to 12 years old, we won like four Super Bowls. So I got to go to California for the first time against the Rams. But a lot of people don't know my grandfather and they think of him as beloved. My grandfather was very strict. He was, you know, there's a reason why guys get to where they are that are like that. He was very focused. I don't want to use the word selfish, but you watch the Michael Jordan thing. You notice Michael Jordan never did anything he didn't want to do. And there's people like that. My grandfather's like that. But just real quick, I'll give you one story. When I was a ball boy for the Steelers, when I was 15, you know, on the weekends, I'd go stay with my grandfather in Pittsburgh from training camp. And my grandmother had already passed away. So it was just me and him in this big old spooky house. And I remember when like the the air came on or something, like all these pipes would start rattling. I'm 15, so I've already sort of gone through puberty. I'm already like this big guy, and I'm like scared to death. I'm in my dad's old room. I remember like walking down the hall to my grandfather's room, and I like knock on the door. I'm like, "Hey, can I come sleep with you?" And so he laughed his ass off, and he so I'm like 15 years old. I'm twice the size of this guy, and I'm sleeping in bed with this like 85-year-old man that's gonna protect me from the ghosts and goblins of his old house. So
that's a great story, one of my favorite stories. Well, hey. Thank you not only for your service in Congress, but your service in the U.S. military before that. Hopefully we'll get you back into public service at some point in the future. But until then, it's really just a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Devin, and thank you for your service and everything you've done. I mean, I can't imagine you've gone through more than any of us have had to go through being the chairman of this committee, and it was really unfair, and I'm glad that you seem like you're in good spirits and continue to serve the people of California. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Tom Rooney, everybody. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wandering. If every road dead ends our dreams,
wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days.
First trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.